Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, Padre Island, Texas. This is Larry Batson, and this is My Wild World, and we've got a great show tonight, everybody. It's going to be a fascinating hour. Hope everybody's had a great week. All I can say is, of course, we are from the central Indiana area. Go Colts. Got the big Super Bowl happening in a week. We're very excited about that. The whole state is just, this whole state's become blue. So we're going to see how Peyton Manning and the rest of those fine young horses do a week from this Sunday in the big Super Bowl in Miami. We hope here that it's a big repeat from a couple of years ago when we played the Chicago Bears in the very same stadium and pretty much wasn't a game. We pretty much commanded it. But I don't want to jinx it, so I'll say no more about it. But I want to take a chance to send a big hello out to Alabama, one of our listeners, Slade Monk, who told me he listens to the show the next day. He downloads it while he's working at the golf course, so and how much he enjoys all the shows, so we really appreciate that. We have a lot of great listeners. We have listeners in New Zealand, England, Ireland, all across North America, so this is very exciting. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to chat with a gentleman. He has several titles. He's an expert fishing guide. He's also a birder, a conservationist. He's a shark and big game fish expert. He's the Padre of Padre Island, Texas, and he was nominated for the Field & Stream magazine's Heroes of Conservation Award, and he was in the final six, Captain Billy Sandifer. How you doing, Captain?
Just fine, and thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show, Larry.
Well, we appreciate it. I'll tell you, I was doing some research looking for guests because, you know, I want to find some really great guests, and somehow I got onto the conservation thing, and I saw this award that Field & Stream magazine was giving out for the Heroes of Conservation. I saw the various candidates, and for some reason, when I read about your activities down there in Texas, I thought, this is the man. I'm going to see if I can get him on the show. And Captain, I'll tell you what, when you said you'd be on, I thought, this is going to be fantastic.
Well, again, I'm thrilled and humbled by the invite.
You weren't born and raised in Padre Island, Texas. You were telling me just before we went on a little history of as a youngster where you were from.
Oh no, I come off a dry land farm and ranch, 56 miles from the surf here.
Mm-hmm.
But when I turned 18, I went to the bus station in Alice, Texas, and asked them, how far do you go from here? And they said, Billings, Montana. And I had a cotton sack for a suitcase, and it had a saddle in it, and I bought a one-way ticket. And so I ended up in Billings, Montana.
Oh, Lord.
My grandparents adopted me, and I never had much of a chance to get to know my maternal mother. And
uh-huh.
She lived in Montana, and the Vietnam War was right up in all of our faces. And so I wanted to take some time to get to know her, and I was lucky enough to spend some time with her and my younger sister, Valerie, who lives in the big state of Indiana. And then I enlisted from up there. But I did do some cowboying at 20 below, so that just about was enough for me.
And you decided you didn't enjoy the cold weather.
Well, you know, I was going with this rancher's daughter, and she was a high school senior, and they asked her what she wanted for graduation, and she said a ring from Billy. And I knew for a fact that she was going to inherit about a quarter million acres of Dakota wheat farm when she turned 21. And I could see me on those 10-mile rows driving a tractor the rest of my life. So I went to Vietnam to escape that wheat farm in Dakota. Now, that's the truth of it.
Boy, the Chamber of Commerce for, was it South Dakota?
I believe it was North Dakota. I don't believe I was that lucky. I might have considered if it had been South Dakota.
Oh my God.
I've always been full of foolishness, always been something of an adventurer and somebody, just an old adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
And I think war does that to young people too. And so I hadn't missed a whole lot.
So you get back from the jungles of Vietnam and all the horror and mess that place was. Though I will have to say I have several good friends. They did 2 and 3 tours.
I did 2 tours.
You did. Well, God love you, man.
I thought I liked it.
You did.
Yeah,
what
but
did
I've been
like
married. Well, I've been married to the same woman twice.
You have.
Pain is my life.
That's 2 tours.
Pain is my life.
And are you married now?
Yeah, same one that I've been married to twice. We've been married for 28 years. No, you only had to go once, but then they gave me a set of orders to Reykjavik, Iceland, to a isolated radar transmitter site.
Yeah.
No liberty, no leave authorized, and all at once I got real patriotic and volunteered to go back to Vietnam to escape those orders from Iceland.
Oh, my Lord.
So the Creator has a real peculiar sense of humor, and I appreciate it. Because, like I say, I haven't missed a whole lot, and it's been a lot of fun. I did 2 different hitches in the military. I got out after 4.5 years and became a deputy U.S. Marshal,
really?
One of the original Sky Marshals that was flying around on 747s with a 38 in your waistband and lived at 3252 72nd Street, Queens, New York, New York. Flew out of JFK and ended up in the Arizona desert on the Pipe Oregon National Park. Working drug interdiction down there when they run out of funding and told me that I was going to be a customs inspector. And the thought of checking dirty diapers at Nogales, Sonora somehow did not suit my adrenaline need. So I went back to the military and spent another 2.5 years down in Cuba. And I've been on the water ever since. I was born to it. I've been some wonderful places. Montana's a wonderful place. And everybody I met from Montana was either of Russian descent or from Oklahoma or a North Texas rodeo cowboy that married the rancher's daughter while he had a broke leg in Montana working rodeo circuit. So it's hilarious. Finest people you ever want to meet, but I just couldn't hear the sound of the surf. So it always brought me back home.
So you go back to Texas, when do you start your? Now, I guess you're called the Padre of Padre Island. I mean,
some reporter named me that.
Well, I think it's.
Well, we were having to. Well, especially since I'm a heathen. But I'm not real fond of the Padre of Padre anyway, one they named it after. He was a Portuguese priest named Nicolaus Balier, and he was really above it, but he got it in a land grant from Spain.
Oh.
And he put his poor old uncle out there running it. But that's how it got to be Padre Island. And I studied this island for a lifetime. Both on the ground and in literature, It seems like about every other generation, there's a protector that comes along. There's somebody that really stands out and is kind of the defender of Padre.
Uh-huh.
And it was my turn in the barrel. And I tell everybody, I said, be careful. Padre Island takes prisoners. And they'll look, and I go, you don't know. You wouldn't believe how many marriages I've seen bust up over Padre Island. How many jobs I know are being lost over Padre Island, because you play around down here long enough, and the next thing you know, it's got a title on you. And they all go, well, Billy, who's going to be your replacement? And I go, you just don't get it, do you? You don't pick, I don't pick my replacement. It does. So that's kind of the way it works. It's really interesting.
Well, it is. It's kind of like I had a friend that lived in Florida. He says, once you get that sand in your shoes, man, he says, you won't go anywhere.
I come home one time, and I've been working on shrimp boats for a year, and my papa got sick, needed me to get off the boats while and take care of his cows. And all I had was them old shrimp and white shrimp and boots like you see on Most Dangerous Catch.
Mm-hmm.
All commercial fishermen wear them around the world. And unless it's cold, you wear them without socks so you can kick them off easy if you get thrown overboard. And my mama looked at me and she said, Billy, where are your shoes at? And I said, well, Mama, I got a pair of flip-flops and I got a pair of shrimping boots. But I guess what you call shoes, I don't own a pair. And she turned around and she looked at my papa and she said, oh, Lord, Ollie. All these years, I've been worried about this kid getting sand in his shoes. My God, he ain't even got any shoes. I've never forgotten that.
Well, how big is the island?
It's 113 miles long. 1954, they dug a channel through the middle of it and split it into North and South Padre Island for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And I work on the Padre Island National Seashore, which is the longest undeveloped beach front in the world, I guess. To my knowledge, it is.
Uh-huh.
And it is 60.4 miles of isolated beach, and 56
wow.
miles of that is four-wheel drive island. I think our end is 84 miles. It's really kind of, North Padre is actually about two-thirds of it, and then South Padre is on the Brownsville end is actually about one-third of it, and I think we've got 80.4 miles on this end, and most of it became a national park in 1962, the legislation, and so... what a blessing that is. You know, everybody wants to run away to a desert island, and heck, these folks down here got one in their front yards and don't even know it's here.
So does it get overtaken during spring break?
Yeah, it got discovered by internet. We were real good about an old southern angling tradition called keeping our mouths shut.
Yep.
And so... there were a handful of people that lived in paradise down there for about 40 years. And then some young marine biology student started a website and was showing everybody all these fish he was catching and this and that. And the next thing I knew, somebody opened a gate. And here they come, boy. And now on a weekend, to me it's real crowded, but... what I call real crowded is like 150 vehicles in 60 miles.
Oh, well.
To me, that's real crowded.
There's that many in the Walmart parking lot here in
Oh, yeah. You know, they always told me that if you stopped to fish and you could see the color of a man's shirt at the next people closest to you, you would stop too close. You were intruding in his space. That was bad manners.
Well, yes, it is.
And I've been down there. When I got out of the military the second time, I never was very much on society anyway, and I went down there and lived a year and a half. I never come out. And I've been down there 16 days without seeing another vehicle.
Whoa.
That's awful cool. I had a pack of coyotes moved in with me. They just moved in with me. I'd kill them a shark every now and then, and they'd just lay their toes up in the air and wouldn't go anywhere. So.
Well, thank you, good people.
Yeah, well, I always figured I had a lot of coyote in me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, I call them, I've always called them God's dogs.
Well, that's true.
And she said, one time she said, we were down at the beach camped, and she said, you know, I'm never going to call them coyotes again. I said, well, I never have. They're God's dogs. And she said, yeah, but do you know why? And usually she doesn't just come up with these grandiose one-liners, you know. I don't expect them. And I said, well, tell me why, honey. And she said, because the dogs in town belong to the white man, and the white man feeds them, so they're man's dogs. These coyotes don't belong to anybody but God, and he's the only one that feeds them.
And Billy.
Ain't that something? Yeah, well, don't tell the feds that. I get chatted at about feeding them every now and then.
Well.
And then I found out later on in studying Native American, both my wife and I have some Native American heritage, and I spent a little time in studying a little bit, and actually, I'm studying all the time something, and the oldest language in North America that exists is Puebloan, and in the Pueblo language, the name for the coyote can only be translated to mean God's dogs. So I thought that was so cool, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I hear them around here, that's what I'm going to start calling them. Because you're absolutely right.
They're God's dogs.
Absolutely.
More of them the kid you kill, the more of them you'll have. you leave them alone, they'll hold a good balance.
Well, that's right.
And, you know, there's been a lot of research done on that. Over the wolves, they reinstated at Yellowstone. And that alpha male and female deal, and the way it works is only Ma and Pa breed. The rest of the pack doesn't breed. And if it's a bad year, Ma and Pa do not mate.
Yep.
But if somebody pops a cap on Ma and Pa, then they're all in jeopardy, and all of them go to breeding their heads off. So the more of them you shoot, the more of them you got. That's hilarious, isn't it?
Well, you know, I know the man who was responsible for putting the wolves back in Yellowstone. He's the former director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Dale Hall. In fact, Billy, you'd love it here because we have two wolves that sleep in our bedroom every night. Ones we've rescued, and that, you know, and over the years, I want to tell you, now that the people's perception of wolves and coyotes has changed a little bit, but 20 years ago, when I lectured with wolves, people looked at me like I was crazy. They said, why do you want to show the importance of this animal? He said, they're nothing but a nuisance. I said, oh, no. This is a very important part of this machine we call our ecosystem.
Oh, and, dude, is it ever.
Yeah,
You do not mess with the apex predators, and you do not mess with the bottom of the food chain.
No.
You can play games in the middle, but you don't mess with the bottom population because it supports everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't mess with the predators, with the top predators.
Well, I'll tell you, Purdue University up in Lafayette, Indiana, people, you know, they say the coyotes are going to kill whatever, but they found two coyotes had been struck along the highway. They did an autopsy, And when they opened up their stomachs, they were expanded to the size of almost basketballs, and they were packed with field mice.
And yeah, well, that's his job.
That's right. And here are the farmers wanting to shoot them, poison them. And I preach this. It's really nice to talk to someone that understands this. I preach this all the time, how important these animals are. So important.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, over much of Texas, they've quit killing rattlesnakes. You know why?
Did.
Yeah,
well,
you know why? They got tired of rats. That's why.
Well, that's right. And
because snakes kill rodents.
Absolutely.
So if you got a rattlesnake around the house and you got kids or a dog, certainly you thump him on the head, or you remove him to some remote area.
Mm-hmm.
But out in the field somewhere, out in the brush, I hadn't killed a rattlesnake in 40 years.
Well,
and we used to, but we don't anymore.
They're important. That's what people know.
They are important. And then what's so hilarious is down here, a lot of these little Texas communities, this is third world. We're south of the Nueces. We're in the Nueces Strip. And it was the most contested piece of real estate in the history of the United States. And started the U.S.-Mexico War over that Nueces Trail between the Nueces and the Rio Grande Rivers. And everybody's looking for some little niche, you know, to try to attract people. And they have big rattlesnake roundups and all this rattlesnake races and all this kind of stuff. And then all at once they had to start importing the rattlesnakes from Oklahoma because they killed all of them. And the loss of we're talking about loss of really important annual revenue to these small rural communities.
Well, Sweetwater, Texas.
Yeah, well, Freer, Texas, out right west of here. And another little place called Old San Patricio, which is one of the oldest towns in Texas on a new Nueces. They have to bring in rattlesnakes, you know. And a lot of the ranchers quit burning off their brush piles because that's where the rattlers can live.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it, too.
No.
Right now, we got a deal going on with the sharks. It just cracks me up because on the East Coast, the scallop fishery is a very economically important industry. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of the rays love to eat scallops. Nothing eats the rays but sharks. So they whack all the fins off all them sharks, deplete the dickens out of their population, and now there are so many Calnose rays up in the Delmarva area that the scallop fishery is in dire jeopardy. And in Texas, used to be you'd hear about somebody stepping on a stingray once every month or so.
Mm-hmm.
Now you hear about it every day. Now, there's so many stingrays that they're in just explosive numbers. And the total reason for it is we've taken out the predators on them.
Well,
when you mess with that chain, you know, like they say, don't mess with Mother Nature. She's got her own set of stops, checks and balances. And when we interact and take out those predators, we're just leaving the door wide open for bad stuff.
Well, the shark fin thing is just so sad. That's just, they had a documentary about that just the other day, and how they basically removed the fins and dumped the rest of the shark back in the ocean.
However, that has been NATO treaty illegal for about 8 years.
Fantastic.
Internationally.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. There's no enforcement. And Mexican boats come up our coastline at night with illegal gill nets and gill net all the sharks they can, cut the fins off and leave them. And the reason is they have literally depleted their populations for the oriental shark fin market on the east coast of Mexico.
So whose responsibility is it to enforce that regulation?
National Marine Fisheries.
And they don't do it.
You know, it's kind of like they don't do it. No, they don't. But I'm not mad at National Marine Fisheries and not enforcement. I'm not. Because the honest truth is they got a handful of guys and a great big ocean.
Well, that's right. That's right.
You know, I mean, laws don't mean anything without enforcement. And so when we're bailing everybody out so they can give $150,000 bonuses to all their employees, we might have some effective game law enforcement support.
Well, it's like the situation now in the Everglades with the pythons. And are you familiar with that, Captain?
No, sir, I'm not.
Well,
but they may be in bad trouble after this last freeze.
So, because what's happened after Hurricane Andrew, they had all these pythons from Indonesia get loose from importers. People have had these things as pets and just released them in the Everglades. Well, there's a breeding population now.
Right. Iguanas, too.
And iguanas, too. And a variety of other. In fact, I've even heard that people have found cobras and God knows what else in the Everglades.
Snakeheads.
And snakeheads, yes, and that's been a huge problem.
The walking catfish.
Oh, the walking catfish, that's been. But I told them, I said, you know, believe me, in Florida, there would be guys, if they would put a bounty on those snakes, they would go in there and they'd take care of the situation.
Probably, I'm sure they would.
Probably for, who knows, $2-3 million that they blew on this auto industry save deal. They could take.
You know, I can't say it right because I can't. Well, what do you call the bad guys? The Taliban? Is that what they call them? The ones that are fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Oh, yeah. Taliban.
Taliban?
Yes.
One of my customers told me, he said, that's a done deal, dude. There's not going to be any more of that. I go, well, hallelujah. How'd they stop it? He said, well, they passed out. They made up 10 million flyers with pictures of two of these guys, and they said, real good eating, limit two, season ended yesterday, and dropped them over South Louisiana. So, that's what you call proper utilization of any resource available, Larry.
That's funny. So did you go fishing today, Billy?
No, I haven't been fishing since Monday. I laid underneath that
man.
Boat I told you about some more. And I'm wrestling with the VA over this Agent Orange stuff, and I'm kicking off the big shell cleanup, and it's about 25 emails a day, and I'm sitting here looking in horror at this stack of little red notes that have people's name and phone numbers on them I'm supposed to be returning. You know, you do these environmental events. I know you're involved in conservation, and it's a one-day event, and everybody goes, wow, man, we knocked them dead. And then they look over there at this handful of guys that got that 1,000-yard stare. Because they've been working day and night for months to put this thing together. And any of these larger events are like that, you know. You gotta be motivated and willing to don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Well, that and, is, you've got people to motivate. So if you're not motivated, I mean.
Yeah.
You've got to be the cheerleader. You make these folks that maybe just don't completely understand what you're trying to do, make sure darn well they do understand it.
Well, I posted on one of our event-friendly message boards today just out of meanness. I said, I have a dream. I said, my dream is that someday 2,500 people are going to show up and say we want to spend 2 days on this cleanup instead of one, and we're going to hold 60 miles of that beach to Mansfield. and I'm probably not smart enough to do it. But maybe I can make y'all feel guilty enough that when I croak, y'all have a special event, and you'll do it one time just to
Absolutely.
Get it done.
I
so that's the way you do.
I have a funny feeling there's somebody listening tonight that's down there that's going to take that, and hopefully it's not too soon, but take that idea and go with it. Well, I'll tell you what, Captain, we're going to take a little break here, and we're going to resume this conversation. Man, it's been great. Folks, this is Blog Talk Radio. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes of PSAs. We're going to be back with the, well, I should say Captain Billy Sandifer. I'm not going to call him the Padre of Padre Island, Texas anymore because he doesn't like it. But he was Field & Stream Magazine's Hero of Conservation Award nominee. So very impressive. We're going to talk more about sharks and some of the stuff he's involved with down there. And sounds like God's country to me, everybody. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World, and this is Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, 1 second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Hi, this is Pat Green. The blood supply is at critically low levels, and you can help. Call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-GIVE-LIFE to schedule your appointment to donate blood. Your donation is critical because every 2 seconds someone in America needs blood. That's accident victims, surgical candidates, and cancer patients, just to name a few. Please donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give too. Please call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to make your appointment. Thank you.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
There are some visitors you'd just rather not see. Like your obnoxious brother-in-law, Lily.
Hey, everybody, we're here. Good to see you. When do we eat?
But then there are some visitors you just can't get enough of. To make your farm or ranch a more attractive place for the visitors you actually want to see, contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office. They can help you build the habitat wildlife loves. But as for Louie, try disconnecting the doorbell. This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. Hope you're enjoying the program tonight. If you're not, I am. I'm having a blast. Want to remind everyone that our website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, please go to it, check it out. It tells all about our wildlife education work that we do, our wild animal rescue, and also if you'd like to contribute to it, there's a place that says donate, so click that, and of course we have the old PayPal, the worldwide system to collect money, and believe me, we need lots of money. Got big plans ahead, so we hope you have a chance to enjoy our website. If you'd like to contribute, we'd definitely appreciate it. We've got a gentleman on tonight from Padre Island, Texas, quite a distinguished guest, I might say, nominated for the Field & Stream magazine's Heroes of Conservation. He was in the final six. He's a fishing guide. He's a birder, bird expert, I should say, conservationist, shark, and other big game fish expert, Captain Billy Sandifer. Billy, how you doing? How you hanging on here?
Oh, man, I'm fine.
It's fun, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's all good, brother.
It's all good.
Hey, Larry, if I can interrupt, we do have a couple callers on the switchboard waiting to talk to you and to Billy.
Oh, great.
You mind if I bring them on the air with us?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to bring in this first caller from the 567 area code. Welcome them to the Wild World program.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Eric. Hi, Billy.
Hi.
This is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
How you doing, Larry?
Well, we're doing great. Man, we've got such a fascinating guest tonight. My show should be 2 hours long tonight.
I'm telling you, this is pretty cool for me because I have been a big fan of sharks since I was old enough to read books.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you remember in like elementary school, you used to have those book cart things that come along, and you could buy books and stuff in elementary school. And the books I always bought were about sharks.
Well,
absolutely love great white sharks.
Well,
Billy, the guest tonight. How many have you worked with great white sharks?
I've seen great whites. Two individuals in my life. They're not common here in the Gulf of Mexico because they normally feed on seals and sea lions and stuff like that, and we just don't have it. We have a few whales and a lot of Atlantic bottlenose dolphin, and I did see about a 13.5 footer repeatedly for about 2 weeks, one January, off the beach. And I used to follow him along and watch him, just get up on top of my truck and watch him with binoculars. He probably weighed about 1,350, 1,400 pounds. And I knew what he was. I wasn't mad at him. I just was really thrilled to have the opportunity to study him. And that fish would do the most bizarre thing ever 100 yards or so. He would stop and stick his head out of the water and look in all directions. And it looked like something out of a cartoon strip. And I go, what in the world? I've never heard of anything like that. And then later on, over the years, on a multitude of shark weeks, they have pointed out that that's one of the idiosyncrasies of a great white, is when he's hunting dolphin. Apparently, he has better eyes than some of the other sharks do. And he's actually looking for them rolling. That's what he's doing. And the other one, I was working on a shrimp boat off of Louisiana, and we had a cow-nose ray in a net that would weigh close to 200 pounds, and it was everything that two of us could do to pick him up and throw him back over the side, and he landed on his back, and I was watching because he was snow white in that beautiful, beautiful indigo-colored water offshore. And then all at once, this big black head came up, and he was gone just like that. And so, but the great white prefers 54 to 56 degree water temperature. And that's what we've got right now. But this is the only time of year that we have that. So he's common in colder water than we have in the Gulf here in Texas.
Well, what do you think accounts for the appearance of the great whites off the coast up there by Massachusetts? I mean, do you think it's cooler
water? Oh, that's
water?
A lot colder water, huh? That's a lot colder water, and you got a lot more whales. But
why
I
haven't
think
they seen them before?
Oh, they've always been there. Frank Mundus, who was the legitimate captain that they patterned Quint after in the movie Jaws, was catching 2,500 pounders in the 70s pretty regular. And he didn't quite play by the rules because he was harpooning pothead whales and grinding them up for chum. And then he would buoy one off and with a beacon on it, and they would go out and fish on it every day, find it in the sea, and see how many great whites were feeding on it. He was specifically targeting these fish, but there's a certain canyon that they fish up there where the water's very deep and very cold. And the Gulf of Mexico, if you look at it on a map, it's almost actually a bay instead of a ocean because it's basically surrounded by water or by land.
Right.
And see, we're temperate. And almost actually half of this island I work on is, I think, it qualifies as semi-tropical. And so it's just a little too hot. But all the mackerel, he's a part of the mackerel shark family. He and the poor beagle and the mako. And we do have a lot of makos, but we do not have a lot of great whites here. I can find historic reference to three being caught in the entire state of Texas. But we most definitely have enough of other species to make up for it.
Because
we've caught tigers up to 820 pounds off the beach here.
Tiger shark?
Mm-hmm, up to 820 pounds.
Man, that's a fish.
Yeah, sure run the Suburban.
Wow.
Park ranger stopped me on the way out. The shark's head was laying at my center console, and its tail was tied off to the luggage rack, which it ripped off, and it tore the tailgate off my truck. And the park ranger stopped me, and I wasn't very pleasant because it had been a real tedious deal getting that shark in that truck, and we were way down in a four-wheel drive area. And this was back in the days when we did kill them. We don't anymore. We just tag them and turn them loose. Actually, I'm now working with science and tagging sharks with radio transmitters.
Oh, wow.
And but I asked that ranger, I jumped out and I said, "For the love of God, what do you want?" And he said, "Oh, give me a break, Billy." I looked back in the rearview mirror, and that old shark's tail is just going from left to right, and it looks like it ate your Suburban as it's swimming up the beach with it, and I just want to get a picture of it. But we've caught 820-pounders down there, 746-pounders, 580-pounders. They have been caught down there up to 1,160 pounds. I'm talking about off the beach.
Right.
And I've fought some fish for hours and hours and hours that were larger than that. I know of at least 18 species of sharks that have been caught off our beach here. And I guess our claim to fame is there have been three makos caught off the Padre Island National Seashore Beach off of dry sand. And that's never been done in North America anywhere else. And Eric Osloan released a 500-pound mako down there, which is kind of cowboyish. And there's been a total of three of them caught down there, which kind of rewrites the rule book because that fish ain't supposed to be caught off of bare sand. So it's a never dull moment in the Texas Riviera.
Is that the biggest shark down there, the tigers?
Yeah, but I've seen 25-foot hammerheads, and nobody's ever put one on a scale that big. So it would kind of be a play there, but I guess you'd have to give probably the odds are that the tiger would outweigh the mako or the hammerhead. What I'm doing, I'm working right now with the Heart Institute for Marine Research in the Gulf of Mexico out of Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and they're putting $5,000 satellite tracking tags on sharks to try to learn more about their movement along our coastlines. And Texas Fish and Game this year got real strict with the shark limits and protected quite a few species and cut the bag limit to just about one a day, period. And as far as I'm concerned, they could go catch and release on them altogether. Because in reality, it's a macho deal. And ain't nobody eating them fish. A 12-foot tiger ought to be just about as tasty as a boot heel. And truth be told, folks will say, I killed him because I want to eat him. And then they'll cut the jaws out of him. And then first time they hit a dipsy dumpster, the meat goes in a dipsy dumpster. And so I'm sure that doesn't happen on my charters. And we tag them and release them, and I tell them it's like the old Native American counting coup, you know, and we're putting tags on all these fish and trying to learn as much about them as we can, because they are, the last figures I heard are frightening. Sent between 1986 and last year, there are less than 25% of all the apex predators remaining in the sea, including all the billfish, all the tunas, and all the sharks. And that's 1986 compared to 2009. Wow. Less than 25%. And it's all us. It's overfishing. It's not climatic anything. It's not change of habitat. It's just greed and abuse of the resource.
Do you see shows like Dangerous Catch, where they're taking all these crabs out of this ocean, and someday this is going to be gone?
Yeah, well, look at the swordfish deal. Kind of burns me, because that's one of they're already in bad trouble. They've been in bad trouble a long time. And used to be two swordfish weighed 300 or 400 pounds. Now they weigh 60. And the one thing it seems so much National Fish and Game stands steady with giving a quota for commercial fishermen, and if anything wants to delete the sport fishing for them. And you know what, they always tell me it's all about money. Okay, if it's all about money, they need to look at the economy that's generated by the sport fishermen versus how much that product brings the economy, just as commercial meat. And I think they're going to find out that they're really cutting themselves short on their resource. They're killing the goose that laid the golden egg.
Well, thanks, Melissa. God, it's great to hear from you.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Okay, this is kind of quick, but I always hear a lot about attacks like off of North Carolina coast and California, and you know, you hear about the occasional attack out in Hawaii and things like that, but I rarely, if ever, do I hear about an attack in off of, you know, like in the Gulf.
Well, Gulf shrimpers swear they're the reason for that. Gulf shrimpers say we're out there, we've got this tremendous bycatch. They got free food hanging out there behind us all day long, and that's why they don't hit people on the beach. Florida had a real flurry of bull shark attacks here a few years ago.
Yeah.
A real flurry, and we have very few. Is there any validity to the shrimper statements? I don't know. I really don't. But I think that in, for example, the California attacks, and when you hear of the Australian attacks, I think those are probably mistaken identity.
Yeah.
I think they look like something else. Because, you know, when you sit on a surfboard and start flopping with your feet and your hands, you sure look like a sea lion or a seal to me.
Right, yeah.
And so that's their natural food. So you're matching a hatch, a fisherman would tell you. And I got hit by a shark. It was one that I released, and it didn't appreciate it the way I thought it should have. And it turned around and hit me running full blast in the shin and got four teeth in me and drug them down to my ankles. And my foot and leg swole up about twice its size. And I thought I was going to lose my foot. And finally, about the fifth doctor visit, I told my doctor, I said, "Randolfo, the decision you make today is going to determine the rest of my and your life, because I don't know anybody that wants to hire a one-legged shark fisherman, and I'm fixing to lose my leg, and if I'm going out, I'm taking you with me." Well, he's used to my foolishness because he'd been my doctor a long time. And he said, "Oh, hell, Billy, I'll just get you a package deal on a peg leg and an eye patch, and you can do the late night TV talk show circuit." And but after I got through choking on him a little while, he gave me some pills that did finally overcome it. But there are very few. And I'll tell you an interesting thing about shark attacks when it's not involved with surfboards and stuff. You know who it's subject to be?
Who's that?
A menstruating female.
Oh.
Well, yeah, blood.
And women never even think about that.
Yeah.
A menstruating female in murky water with bait fish in it.
Right.
So sometimes, or I saw on TV this 11-year-old that they're trying to save his leg in Florida a few years ago, and then the reporter sticks his head up in the camera and says in the microphone, "This is in the same place the 9-year-old got killed yesterday." Who in the world would let their 11-year-old child go onto a beach, the very beach in the very same spot where a shark killed a child the day before? I don't know if he's trying to save the price of a secondary education or what, but it looks like me that just good old common sense. Down here, especially down in that isolated area, everybody knows those sharks are down there, and they don't do the foolishness that people do on crowded beaches. If we did, we'd probably have a lot of shark attacks.
Well, makes sense.
Sure it does.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you a lot for answering my questions. It's been a real treat to actually talk to somebody who's worked with these animals for so long. And God bless you for doing the work.
Well, I don't think I had anything to say about it. When I was 14 years old, I caught a 6-foot, 4-inch tarpon. And I come home and I showed my mama the pictures, and she turned around and she said, "Papa, you've ruined this kid." And he said, "Nah, Hazel. With this one, it didn't make any difference. He wasn't never going to amount to nothing anyway. He never was going to do nothing but fish. So one tarpon ain't going to make or break him." So
there you go.
But all I do know is I am really, really proud of our youth, and I'm proud of the conservation ethic that I see with our youth and their appreciation for the resource. And when I was young, we didn't know any better. We thought that the ocean was a unbounded resource. We couldn't possibly endanger it with a rod and reel. Now we know better.
Right.
And it's more than just the rod and reel. It's all these longliners and everything else. But a dead fish is a dead fish. Doesn't matter how it got dead. And so if we want these fish here for generations to be able to enjoy their splendor, then we've got to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really cool to meet a lady that likes sharks. Sharks are cool. I like sharks.
Well, if I knew how to dive, I'd be in a cage diving, because I think sharks are the most magnificent animals on the face of this planet, right next to gorillas and chimps and tigers. So, I mean, but I got to say, I think sharks are just the coolest animals in the entire world. I just absolutely love them, and I'm glad that there's people out there trying to protect them and learn from them. So, you know, I think they're just fascinating animals. I really do.
Oh, they are. They are. You know, I wrote an article years ago when I quit killing them. And I write for a Texas, very conservation-oriented saltwater publication that is just a stand-up magazine. And I told them, you know, nothing is prettier than a shark when you see it. And then to see it 2 hours later with those old gray, dead eyes and everything, nothing's more horrible. You know, and so it seems like, you know, something, oh man, it's so pretty, let's kill it. What's up with that?
Yeah.
I miss something, you know.
Yeah, I miss that too.
You know, but I mean, it's the truth, isn't it, Larry?
Absolutely.
Boy, that critter is so pretty, let me shoot it.
Yeah.
Heck, the only thing I'm sure there's too many of that probably some need shooting is the Homo sapiens. You know?
Yeah, we could clear out a few. I know.
We could clear out a few.
Some right here with the close proximity of me.
Yeah, I'd like to hire out, but nobody offers, you know, so.
They're wasting oxygen.
Yeah, well, no, they don't. They steal the air they breathe.
There you go.
It could be used by something that's relative to the food chain or to the total ecosystem. You know, a sea slug or something.
Yep.
Something could be utilizing that oxygen because they're wasting it. But but anyway, all I do know, we're a long way from there. But overall, I don't think we're near as dumb as we used to be. And so, progress, not perfection, huh?
Right.
And I'm considered a senior guide, you know, and whether I like it or not, I have a following. And so my responsibility is to try to guide in the right direction to protect these resources and make everybody understand how really fragile they are. So,
I think that's wonderful. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Bye.
You bet. Thank you. Well, Captain, I'm going to tell you right now, man, we've got to do a part two sometime.
Cool.
Absolutely. It's because this hour has absolutely flown by. How do folks get a hold of you if they want to go down to Padre Island and go fishing with you?
Well, if they want to go fishing or bird watching or turtle nest hunting, Padre Island is the most important, second most important nesting ground for the most endangered sea creature, the Camp Ridley turtle. And they had 197 nests last year. And the most important one is down in Mexico, and we're number two. So we just have a wide diversity. We're in mainstream migration for all birds in North America. And my website is just my name, all squashed together, BillySandifer.com, and it has lots of information on there.
It does.
And my phone number is 361-937-8446. And there's also just all kinds of information on the website, Larry. And again, thank you so much for having me on the show, brother.
Well, I want to tell you, it's been a pleasure. Feel a connection, though we've never had a chance to meet in person, but that's going to change. I'm going to try to get down there one day and see this beautiful Padre Island and have a chance to enjoy the flora and the fauna, and it just sounds spectacular. Just spectacular.
Well, good on you.
I'll do her. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've got your phone number, so I'm going to call you for part two. We'll do in the next few weeks if you want to do her, we'll do her.
Oh, it'll tickle me to death because there's some real issues I'd like to address if we had time.
Well, we want, like I said, the night show was too short. We should have been on for 2 hours. But
all right, man.
What we can do, Captain Billy Sandifer, and that's spelled S-A-N-D-I-F-E-R. So if you have any questions on his website, you just Google Captain Billy Sandifer, and you'll find
up with about 1,600 hits, and some of them are from a black preacher from Alabama, but most of them are me.
Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Larry Batson's Wild World. This is Blog Talk Radio. I want to remind you, when you go to Blog Talk, put us on as one of your favorites, and that we'd greatly appreciate it. We thank you for listening. We'll be back next Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We've got a fantastic guest. We had a fantastic one tonight, but next week we're going to have falconer, bird of prey expert Steve Hoddy from the state of Georgia. He's going to be telling us all about his expertise on the eagles and hawks that he's worked with. And have a great week. This is Larry Batson, and thank you for visiting My Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.